First up, employee recognitions for length of service, and we do this generally on the first meeting of each month to recognize employees for service milestones of 5 years or more with the county. And in this case, we have recognition of five employees who have a combined 75 years of service to Lincoln County. When I call your name, would you please come forward? And we have a certificate and a service pin for you, and then remain up here. I think there's only two of the five here today, but we will briefly recess the meeting for a photograph. Stuart Fisher of the Juvenile Department, 25 years of service. Richard Evans, Planning Department, 20 years. David Boyes, Sheriff's Office, 15 years. Susie O'Toole, Parole and Probation, 10 years. And Carrie Hayes, Health and Human Services, 5 years. And yes, we'll recess briefly. And thank you. Thank you. Mr. Miller?
Carrie, could you go off the other side of the bill? Hey, smile very
wide. Thank you. All right. Thanks.
Don't worry, they'll just cut you out of the
picture. Yeah, just Photoshop me out of that puppy.
All righty, and also Dale is here from personnel and introduction of our new employees. So okay, please go ahead. Yeah.
Okay,
so we can get you.
While they're coming up, I'd just like to add my thanks to the employees who have served, that's a poor word, have been good employees for the last 10 years and 5 years in their respective positions. So thank you.
You want to stay off?
Oh, huh? No, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, friend here is right. Good. Yeah.
Awesome. Even your suit.
All righty, and if everybody, if you just introduce yourself and tell us your department.
Sure. My name is Michael Kemp. I'm with Health and Human Services. I'm the co-occurring services coordinator.
Ann Stowe, parole and probation technician.
Elizabeth Donner, child and family therapist. Yeah. Olivia Casey, sheriff's office, animal care specialist.
Nicole Hadley, victim's assistance, victim advocate, DA's office.
Linda Grossman, behavioral health. I'm a co-occurring disorder therapist.
Well, welcome to all of you, and hope you enjoy many years with the county, and we'll see you back here in 5 years for your first pin, and hopefully before that as well.
Come see us again.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Welcome to the county.
Next up, we have our consent calendar. These are either routine items or items that have been discussed at previous meetings, and Mr. Belmont, I would say, isn't it pretty typical this time of year? We have a long consent calendar with a lot of contract amendments coming to the end of the calendar year.
That is correct.
But all this is pretty much routine business, correct?
It is.
So nothing that needs to be highlighted or removed? All right, I'd entertain a motion then for approval of this.
I'll make a motion to adopt the consent calendar.
And I'll second it.
Thank you, gentlemen. All in favor of adoption of the consent calendar, please say aye.
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 Aye. It's approved. All righty. Next up, we have a public hearing on the legalization of Southeast 23rd Street in Lincoln County, otherwise known as County Road Number 107. So at this point, I will open the public hearing and ask for a staff report. I believe Mr. Waffenschmidt and Mr. Kenyon will be our presenters. And then following their presentation, we'll open it up to board questions and then public testimony.
Good morning, everyone.
I'm Roy Kenyon, Public Works Director for Lincoln County.
John Waffenschmidt, County Surveyor.
We are here today to continue the process of the legalization of Southeast 23rd Drive in Lincoln City. Under ORS 368-201, The governing body may initiate proceedings to legalize a county road if the location of the road cannot be accurately determined due to numerous alterations of the road, or if there is a defective survey of the road or adjacent property. Also, under the same ORS, the governing body may initiate proceedings to legalize a county road if the road as traveled and used for 10 years or more does not conform to the location of the road described in the county records. In this case, on Southeast 23rd Drive, both those conditions exist. The road was deeded to the county in 1940. We're not exactly sure what the date was that the road was actually constructed. We think that it may actually have existed in some shape or form prior to the deeding, but we can't find proof of that at this time. The need for legalization came about because of development that is starting to occur adjacent to Southeast 23rd Drive. Because the road as it exists is outside of the deeded right-of-way in places, it makes it difficult for such departments such as planning to assess what the appropriate setback requirements would be on new structures, because the right-of-way is in question. And so what we're here to do is to initiate the process to bring everything back in line. The county surveyor has done the survey, has looked into the history of the road, and actually I would like John then to give you that history.
Commissioners, you have before you our survey, which you ordered in a previous action. What we've done is we've retraced the deeds that were given to Lincoln County in 1940. There were three deeds involved here. There are ambiguities in the deed which led to some question about their location. In addition to that, we have part of the road that goes into Government Lot 5 where the county does not have a deed. The statutory process for this is for us to go out and determine where the road is, and then the process runs to where we do this survey located in relationship to the original establishment and give that to you. What we've done in terms of process here is we've gone out and tied both edges of the paved traveled way. That's shown on your document in front of you on the survey and its relationship to the deeds. As you'll note, there were three deeds. There's a deed on the westerly portion of the road, which is only 30 feet wide, and then the two deeds on the easterly two-thirds of the road are 60 feet wide. What we've done is simply show the relationship of the deed and the traveled way for your benefit.
Commissioners, can I note a couple of things for the record? You do have in your packets in here both a letter from Mr. Waffenschmidt with the a little bit of the history and description of the road, as well as then the legalization survey, and I'd like to make sure those are both entered into the record. You then have Mr. Kenyon's letter on November 30th, which is the letter required by 368-206 subparent B. Is the official written report on the legalization. If I can, I'd like to ask just a couple of questions for the gentleman here to
please
get some information from you in terms of what this entails here. And then when you open it up for comments, objections, anything else that will be coming through, I do want to note that we did receive a letter for the record from Jeff Outerkirk on behalf of Larry Morris, who owns property on the west end of the area being surveyed. I don't see either Mr. Outerkirk or Mr. Morris here today, but at least we'll need to note that for the record that we do have a letter from them. And so could you explain, John, a little bit about the widths of the surveyed right-of-way here?
Right. So we have a deed for the westerly part. And it is 30 feet wide. It's very clear that it's 30 feet wide. And one of the language in the deed is interesting in that it mentions it, quote, it will become effective when the bed of the road is graded to a width of at least 20 feet wide. And it goes on to talk about the road up near the intersection, which is now Highway 101, as 30 feet wide. And that's unusual that we see that. It leads us to believe that the road may not have been completely constructed at the time of the deeds, that there was subsequent work done on the roads. That's fairly common. The survey oftentimes predates when the road is constructed. Surveyors are often not the first people on the ground. And it looks like the road was not constructed exactly where the deeds show that it was. So that goes up to, as I said, about the first third of the road. One aspect of that is that we've tied the pavement, and we've also tied some of the additional things that are needed for a road, such as ditch lines, slope cuts, fills, utilities that are in place in the right-of-way. And those do not necessarily fit within the 30-foot deeded from the original deed, but they may be dealt with by a separate process other than the legalization process we have here today before us. Once we get past the first third of the road and go easterly of there, there are two separate deeds, both of which conveyed a 60-foot right-of-way to the county. Again, the traveled way of the road does not fit inside of that deeded area consistently. It jumps in and out, however, that would be wide enough in those areas to contain all of the utilities and the other road construction, ditches and slopes and such, based upon its relationship to the center line of the traveled way, not necessarily the deed. And that's really what the statutory process does, is that when we have a defect in an establishment of a road versus where the road is today, that's what ORS 368 is designed to resolve, and that's what we're here for today.
Okay. Any further questions, Mr. Belmont?
You don't actually show the location of the utilities.
No, we do not. It's not necessarily intended to be a engineering-type survey that you have before you. It's mainly to show the deeded right-of-way versus the traveled way. We do have ties on most of the utilities, but not all. So should we need to go forward with that type of process, we'll have to do additional field work in order to tie down the rest of the utilities.
But by and large, utilities lie outside of the – do they lie in or outside of the paved – the improved area?
By and large, the utilities are outside of the paved area.
Okay.
Correct. We have, they're mainly cables, phone cables.
And there's natural gas.
Natural gas. We have several of those type of utilities that run down.
Electrical supplies.
Right, correct. We have power poles, things of that nature. When you look at our survey and you see this shaded in area, that's strictly the traveled way. However, as I stated, the utilities using the right of way will fall within the 60 foot off of the center line of the traveled way, but they don't always fall within the 30 foot off of the traveled way.
That's all the questions I have at this point.
Okay. Commissioners.
I'd like a clarification. Obviously, we have a situation where there's been a road that's been traveled. I guess I'm not sure whether it's paved the whole way or not, but there is a road that has been traveled for a considerable number of years. And correct me if I'm wrong, but in an effort to try to resolve some of these issues, this legalization process was requested by our board. And what's the law determines, or how does the law determine what takes precedence? In other words, I think I heard you say that you've gone back through the records of the county, and based on those records, have determined where the road should be, and that takes precedence over where the road has been?
Well,
clarify that.
I'll try and clarify that. It's not unusual. We've been before you before where the traveled way of the road does not match the original establishment of a right-of-way, if you will. And this is somewhat different in that oftentimes county roads are established by a road viewer process where they go out and determine that, yes, we'd like to have a road in this area, and then it proceeds forward. Those typically occurred in the late 1800s, early 1900s. This happened in 1940. The county took deed for the road in three separate deeds. And as I mentioned in my report, soon thereafter, we have evidence from 1945, 1946. Now, these deeds occurred in 1940, but in 45, 46, we already have evidence that the road is not within the deeded right-of-way. So the problem has been before us for 70 years at least. No one has ever taken action to deal with it, however. And so when we talk about how the statutory process goes, the statute essentially is there to resolve these situations. In this case, we have some ambiguity as to where the deeds are, which is the same as if we have a road viewer process. We have some ambiguity as where they laid out the road. And it's designed to put the travel way in conformance with the right-of-way.
So the short answer is the road as traveled holds over the road is on paper.
Pardon me?
The road as traveled would hold over the road as on paper.
Okay.
The right of way on paper.
And there was no real impetus to address this before now, even though the awareness dates back decades, because of the level of either current or contemplated development. That's what drove this process forward, correct?
That is correct.
All right, anything else from the board at this time? Gentlemen, anything else from you? All right, we'll ask you to stand down then for the moment at least. We might want to recall you depending, and we'll open it up to public comment on this request. Mr. Bartoldus, are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Dennis Bartoldus, Post Office Box 1510, Newport, Oregon. I'm an attorney that's representing Mike Phillips via his trust. It's one of the owners of the property along this road. Mr. Geddes and Ms. Morris are also here this morning. I'm not representing them, but they both have property along the roadway and are interested in this proceeding as well. As we get started, there are some things that I'd like to present to you in terms of some handouts here, if I can get through all my stack, and it looks like I left a couple things here.
While he's doing that, can I just maybe make sure it's clear? I see Ms. Morris is here, but that's for a different property than I'm assuming that what the letter that came in on behalf of Larry.
Correct.
Yeah, so there's different parties here. There's different ownerships that are along the road. So
we're toward the end.
Towards the end.
Well, we are the end property where the street stops.
Right, so the letter that was submitted was on behalf of Larry Morris at the intersection of 23rd and 101.
Okay,
just to clarify that for the record.
What I'd like to do is present these. I've got 10 copies here. I've got an original that I'll give to Ms. Graham as the recorder, so you have that. And then I've got a memorandum and some exhibits that I'll be going through here.
Okay.
And also an aerial view of the entire road that was put together from your GIS system. It's one thing to look at this on a survey that doesn't have everything in it. It's another thing when you get it on an aerial that shows everything in living color here. Also, so I don't forget, Mr. Phillips had received a letter from another property owner along the road. I just received this morning. This is from Dwayne Tickner and Miles Bickstrom. And so I'll just submit their letter into the record as well.
I don't represent that, but we were just asked to deliver that into the record.
Okay, and can we get copies of that made and circulated to the commissioners? Thank you. All righty.
One of the reasons why this matter is before you is because Mr. Phillips, who owns property toward the end of the road, has submitted a land use application to the county planning department to develop property near the end of the roadway. His property is tax lot 1003, which is this area right here. Probably shows best on this one right here. His property is in this area here. His property is long and narrow. It's got an elevation change toward the west end. But generally speaking, it's developable property. As you'll see probably from that aerial photograph, and if you were to walk the road, a lot of the property out there is on a fairly steep slope. And the road was more or less cut into the side of the hill when it was originally cut. The proposal that you have before you has a great impact on his property because the actual paved surface of the roadway is actually up onto his property by survey. I have provided you copies with a copy of the contract and deed by which he purchased the property, and his legal descriptions runs to the right-of-way of the roadway. So on the east end, for example, if you were to actually run the line, it would extend 40 feet further than it shows on the proposed legalization survey. Altogether, he loses just a little bit less than half an acre if the road right-of-way were to be widened to a full 60 feet. Presently, part of the actual paved road is above his property line. Especially on the east end of his property, there would be a significant impact. So he's very concerned about this. One of the things that you have before you in kind of a reduced form is the plans that he submitted to the planning department for where he would be placing his buildings on the property. On the original there, I've submitted a full-size copy, and you can really see it on there how this would impact his proposal. So what we're requesting is that the road be legalized because he would like some certainty as he moves forward with his development proposal. We're also requesting that that it be legalized to a width that is less than 60 feet. We've got some photos, too, that show where currently the utilities are. And we simply stated our position is that the road should be legalized, but to a right-of-way width of 30 feet for the entire length. Now, there's two things I'd like to basically do during the presentation. One is talk about the process itself and what you have the authority to do. The second part is to talk about generally the impact to the Phillips property and to other owners along the road. As your staff indicated, this is a legalization proceedings under ORS 368. Now, staff did what they were directed to do under the statute. The statute says that they're to go out there and they're basically to prepare a drawing showing the center line of the existing roadway and where that would run. That's what the statute says they're to do. The statute also gives the county commissioners very broad authority to modify where the road is actually located. And specifically, it says you can reduce the road right-of-way width below what would otherwise be required, whether that requirement at the time was 50 feet or 60 feet or whatever it might have been. Here, we're governed initially by the deeds that there was a 30-foot right-of-way dedicated on the west area. There was a 60-foot beyond that, which is kind of strange when you figure it because this road dead ends. Keep in mind, this road, the entire roadway, according to the surveyor, is 7/10 of a mile. So we're talking about a roadway that's less than 7/10 of a mile that dead ends just a couple hundred feet past the Phillips property. and that's the end of the county road. Is there any possibility that this road's going to be extended? The answer to that is no. And I've got some photos in here I'm going to go through, but everything, this is kind of a peninsula, if you will, that extends out from Highway 101 in Lincoln City that's in the urban growth boundary. Nothing from Highway 101 out is in the city yet, but it's in the urban growth boundary. So someday that's contemplated to be in the city of Lincoln City, but we're governed by the urban growth boundary, which says everything's going to stop right here. This is also one of the few pockets of industrial property that the county has. Now, previously, we were before you on a matter to adjust the setbacks in industrial zones, and we believe that you appropriately amended the zoning ordinance to allow flexibility of those setbacks, because industrial land is limited in the county, it's valuable, and it creates jobs. That's one of the things in the county that does land divisions, that does create jobs. Now, Mr. Phillips has proposed that this land be used for industrial purposes. He's designed some different types of buildings and warehouses that would be used for anything from warehousing to distributorships to car repair to truck repair, kind of a wide variety of uses that could take place on this property. So when we submitted the plans to the county, we realized there was some conflict between where those buildings were going to be and what the interface is. Under the proposal that he's making to legalize it to 30 feet, there would still be room for the traveled surface, and there would be an area on the side for utilities. In fact, if you look at the large drawing in particular that's submitted, you can see that all the existing utilities are contained within what we're proposing for the right-of-way. And in the conclusion of my memo, I said that this is more or less a situation that pleads for a scalpel approach rather than a chainsaw approach. Now, I'm addressing the situation on Mr. Phillips' property, but if you look at the aerial photograph that I've marked Exhibit 3, and I wish I could have got it a little bit bigger, but this is the size that we ended up with, you can see that throughout the length of this 7/10 of a mile, you have areas where the road is out of the right-of-way to the north, out of the right-of-way to the south, a lot of variation in where it runs. And in the late 90s, there was actually a change in the end of the road where the end of the road was vacated in a proceeding, and that was done when Commissioners Lindley, Cowan, and Leonard were in office at the end of the road. And it straightened out the road in front of just past Mr. Phillips' property there, and their part of the road was vacated, and it was straightened out and dead-ended there. In particular, it should be noted that in what I'll call the center section, in this area just above the exhibit marker in here, is still a heavily wooded area that is quite a slope. The road location's not going to change, okay? The paved surface is where the paved surface is, and we know that's not going to change. But by the same token, that paved surface is not going to be expanded, and the roadbed's really not going to be expanded, especially when you look at certain areas here. If you look at this area just above Exhibit 3, and I'll run through some photos here in a moment, on the south side, you've got a hillside that goes way up that's going to be hard to cut into, that's going to be hard to do anything with. On the north side of the road, you've got a continued slope just a few feet off the road that runs down to Baldy Creek, which is a wetland area. We're not really going to want to risk disturbing that wetland area. The road's not going to be expanded. It's not going to go any further. It's already a paved road. When I was out there the other day, and I've been out there I don't know how many times since the start of this matter, but a lot of times, I've become very familiar with certain areas of the county when I get involved in a land use case and go out there and walk it foot by foot. But the fact is, there were dump trucks, there were other vehicles moving along that road without any problem. I mean, they were driving reasonably. It was a paved road. There was really no issue. So the road is suitable as it's paved and has a roadbed now for the uses that are going to be out there. Mr. Phillips' property is probably the most likely candidate for the properties to be developed because of the topography on it. So if we actually do look at the photographs, and I'd like to run through the exhibits, actually probably exhibit number four. Exhibit three was the large aerial that you have in front of you. Exhibit number four is basically a closer up shot that shows Mr. Phillips' property in relationship to the current roadway. And you can also generally see the property lines there. Exhibit 5 is a survey that was prepared by Darius Ferguson, who's a longtime surveyor in Lincoln County here. And he prepared this to show along Mr. Phillips' property what the area that would basically be taken from him, that would be about 15 feet on the west end and 40 feet on the east end. So that shaded area is the property that Mr. Phillips would lose to a full 60-foot legalization. Now, he understands that he's going to lose some property from a legalization because, I mean, the paved road is on his property and that's not going to move. What we're proposing is an area that would accommodate the proposed road and allow an area for utilities. Exhibit 6 shows the building plans that he submitted to the building department or to the planning department for a conditional use permit. Please keep in mind that all uses under your industrial zone except caretaker residences are conditional use permits. And you can see from that northerly red line there that if it was expanded to a full 60-foot right-of-way, then it would take off some of the buildings that he's proposing. And certainly from our point of view, and I hope from the county's perspective too, when you take away the ability to do that, you're also losing the tax base. I talked with the assessor's office and asked them for some information about the tax, what the taxes are on industrial properties in the Lincoln City area. And they pulled out the information and said, if you had a flat piece of land in Lincoln City that was served by utilities, the average value on that would be about $250,000 per acre. Now, granted, this isn't flat land in the middle of Lincoln City with all the utilities. So there's some offset for that. But it's still really valuable land because you don't have that much industrial land. Lincoln City does not have that much industrial land. I was involved up there in a case recently where I had to do a study of industrial land. Most of what they have is already taken. And they really need this land to help with their industrial base up there. But in any event, this land is valuable, and when you take the value of the land together with the improvements on it, you know, I calculated just roughly that you're probably losing $2,500 of taxes a year once the development, just for, and that's probably really, really conservative. And so, you know, over a 10-year period, that's 25 grand. It's probably going to be more than that. Probably going to be 40 or 50 grand over that 10-year period. And this is only one parcel of property along the whole roadway. And it's going to help everyone along the roadway to resolve that uncertainty. So anyway, that's the plans. And a lot of this you can see a lot better on the very large plan that I submitted into the record there. Now, Exhibit 7, this is simply the planning map, the zoning map of Lincoln City. You can see on the right-hand side where that brown line extends out is the area generally we're talking about. It's in the urban growth boundary as shown by that brown line, but it's not yet within the city. Exhibit 8 is simply an aerial photograph taken from the county GIS system that shows this truly is the end of the road. Once you get past this little enclave there, it's timberland. And as we're all aware, under Oregon's land use laws, you're really not going to do much on timberland. The urban growth boundary is not going to extend out there. Lincoln City probably already has, I shouldn't say that, they already have a lot of property within their urban growth boundary that's not yet developed. So the chances of that ever expanding is virtually nil out in this area. And then just to back that up, Exhibit 9 is a zoning map of Lincoln County showing the northern portion of the county. And you can see this little tiny red enclave up here. That's the property we're talking about. That's industrially zoned land. And if you look at this map, you're not going to see too much red area to show much available industrial property. And then the green is the timber conservation zone land, which is 90% or plus of the county. Now, now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty in some of the photos we've submitted here. Exhibit 10 is a photograph that shows the property in front of, well, in front of Mr. Phillips' property. It shows the roadway. There were utility locates, and I believe they only took place on Mr. Phillips' property. I don't believe they took place along the whole area. But you'll see the edge of the paved road. Mr. Phillips' property is to the left on this photograph. And those orange lines and flags that run through there indicate the utility locates. So you'll see where those are located outside of the traveled portion of the highway. If you compare those lines to the ones that are submitted on Mr. Phillips' development plan, you'll see that all those are accommodated in the right-of-way. Exhibit 11 is also a picture that's a little bit taken a little bit further east, showing the same thing. You can see the cable pedestal there, and that's also accommodated, would also be in the right-of-way under the proposal. I say proposal. Essentially, we're saying if you do a 30-foot right-of-way, you'll accommodate the traveled surface of the road. Mr. Phillips will give up some property. The utilities will still be accommodated. And then exhibits 12, 13 show those basically those same things where they've done the locates and where they are in relationship to the pavement. Exhibit 14 was taken west of the Phillips property up on the knoll, kind of in that what I've called the green area up above exhibit tab 3 on exhibit 3. You'll see on the right-hand side the slope of the road or the slope of the topography that goes up there. It's pretty steep. You'll see a telephone pole on the left, and just beyond that pole to the left is where it starts falling off. So this is built like on a little bench there, and on the left of the picture would be going down to Baldy Creek. Exhibit 15 shows pretty much the same location looking west, where you see the same type of topography. You see the hillside on the left-hand side. It falls off down to Baldy Creek on the right side. Photos 16 through 19 are photos that were taken a little bit further west. They're taken just before the road changes from a 30-foot right-of-way to a 60-foot right-of-way. There's quite a significant wetland area there. The road is built already there. It's been in existence, I'm sure, for a number of years. But the simple point is that that road's not going to be expanded through those wetland areas, both by probably the land use regulations and also by virtue of just the practical nature of trying to expand the road in that particular area.
Are these photos looking south?
The ones,
16, 17.
Okay, 16 is looking north. You can see the center line of the roadway right here. You can see the yellow line right here in the middle of the roadway. And that's looking north, and 16 and 17 are looking north. 18 is looking north, and 19 is looking south. So to give you a reference, 16 is looking north, 19 is looking south.
On both sides of the road?
Correct. Correct. Yeah, they're on both sides of the road, and it's basically just a few feet off the pavement on each side.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, that's where the wetland areas are most significant because you can see them right there on the road. If you walk along the road in this area right up through here, you'll see that down in this area here where Baldy Creek is, there's quite a marshy area through quite a large area down there. Why do I go through all this? Well, one of the reasons is because under the statute, as I mentioned from the beginning, you have the ability to make findings to reduce the right-of-way. In this case, I think there's a very, very strong case to be made. I was going to use the word no-brainer, but then I thought maybe that was a little bit too strong. But I think there's a very, very strong case to be made to say that the right-of-way can be reduced in this area because of the length of the road, because of the topographical constraints, because the impact on private property, because its relationship to the urban growth boundary, because of the tax loss to the county, because of the environmental concerns on the roadway by Baldy Creek, and because of the historical development and use of that property. So this is kind of the handoff. Okay. The staff has done their job. They did what they had to do. They're by statute, they're told to go out and say, where's the center line of the road, and where would the right-of-way be if you used what was originally granted, which in this case would be 60 feet. Now it's handed off to you as the decision makers to say, you've got all this information, you're having the hearing, you have the ability to modify that. It can be done in a couple ways. It can, and I know Mr. Belmont can totally educate you on this, but number one is there's no requirement that the paved road has to be in the center of the right-of-way. I mean, a lot of times that's nice to have it that way, but when I was talking with Mr. Belmont, he said, well, this is like a lot of the other roads we have in the county. And I said, yeah, it is. That's too bad, because there's a lot of roads that are not located in right-of-ways, and I know that's kind of a process to correct them. But you do have the ability. You don't have to have the paved road in the center of the right-of-way. You have the ability to modify the right-of-way width when you're dealing with legalization proceedings. It doesn't have to be a one-size-fits-all. I've advocated for what Mr. Phillips wants. There may be other property owners along the roadway that are saying, no, you got to switch a little bit to the north because you're taking our property to the south. That may be. What we're hopeful of is that you'll make a very considered decision that takes into account all these things, that's respectful of the private property owners' rights, what they're trying to do, and also makes sense for the county, because I know you have to look at the entire public good. Certainly, as it is in front of the Phillips property, we believe that those two coincide, that what benefits Mr. Phillips also benefits the county, and it's in the public good. So again, as I indicated, the easiest decision isn't necessarily the right decision. In fact, I don't think it is. And the other thing is, I think this deserves a scalpel approach rather than a buzzsaw approach. Okay. Thank you. I'd be glad to answer any questions you have, and maybe Mike would like to make a comment or two. I don't know if you want to.
No, I don't really have. I think Dennis said everything pretty well.
Okay, then we'll open it up to the board if there are questions for Mr. Bartholdis or Mr. Phillips at this time.
You made the comment in your talk that you we're looking to develop truck facilities there.
We don't plan on doing anything specific. The facilities will be made available for whoever they're for rent and for whoever or
but,
whatever type of
but the comment that Mr. Bartholdis made to me, it was trucks.
Could
so
be.
Then the question is width of trucks, safety of trucks, this type of an issue if since that's what was stated by Mr. Bartholdis, I assume that that's a real possibility with your property. So I'm not an expert on truck widths, so, and I guess our road department, I'll wait and ask the question of our road department.
Well, I think a lot of that can already be answered to extent by the uses that are already up there. And I made that as part of these are the possibilities. We haven't ruled out any possibilities yet because, you know, it's industrial zone property. But if you do look right up past here, you've got the FedEx distribution facility. So you've got the FedEx trucks that are right there. You've also got trucks. There's a construction. This one right here is
further east of that is Bill Sexton's facility, where he has used to have crane service and worked out of there and had low boys hauling his cranes in and out of there. further east beyond him is Dan Kaufman, who is an excavator and hauls equipment in and out of there.
And both those, especially with cranes, you're looking at wide loads that can, I don't know what the legal, that you have to put wide load signs on 10 foot. So beyond that, a train can go to.
Yes, and, well, and with prior the to that, there's,
cars.
And in the 30-foot section, 30-foot road easement section, there's two concrete batch plants that, you know, both obviously have trucks delivering and moving in and out of there, so.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess, you know, my comment on that is while I was up there, taking the pictures and we were doing some measurements and things, there were dump trucks that were going by there. And they were well within, I mean, they were traveling reasonably. They were totally within their lane of traffic. They weren't cutting corners.
That's
and
9 feet. Dump trucks, 9 feet.
Yeah, and I mean, there's still plenty of width. And I guess the matter is that since the crane services and everything are all up there, I don't see that we're going to be doing anything with them. What we're looking at is probably, you know, maybe automotive repair distributorships that would be going in there that would have trucks similar to probably what a FedEx truck would be like. You know, we don't want to cut out the possibilities because we're not sure what the nature of the beast might ultimately be, other than there's a need for this general kind of facility in Lincoln City. And as you can see from the plans, he's proposing different sizes of buildings. So that'll depend on if you want to rent a small shop, you got a small shop. If you want a bigger shop, you can rent a bigger shop. Some people may want to use it for storage. But I guess the other part of that is the county realistically ever going to widen the right-of-way up there? I mean, are they going to widen the road? The right-of-way only serves a purpose if there's a reason really to have it. And our position is it really doesn't here because the paved road is there. And this is in the urban growth boundary for Lincoln City. So, and interestingly enough, in the transportation plan, there were four, the county's transportation plan, which is 300 and some pages long, and I actually reviewed it all. It said that there were four roads in the Lincoln City area that were under county jurisdiction that they took care of. And interestingly, this was not one of them that was mentioned in there. So I think that, you know, what we're dealing about here is 0.7 miles long. It's not going to go anywhere further. And I don't see that what happens on the Phillips property is really going to add to what's already there, existing.
If I could add one thing regarding Mr. Thompson's question, also during the development of the site plan, we went to Roy Kenyon with the road department. He had some issues with about access for trucks, and the plan was modified, I believe to his satisfaction, to accommodate truck access to the site.
Yeah. I'll wait and ask the rest of the questions from our road staff.
Okay. Anything else for...
Yeah, I'd like clarification. So this Exhibit 6 shows the proposed layout arrangement of the buildings. At this point, nothing's been done as far as site preparation, that thing, type of preliminary work. Nope. And I guess my next question is, what's sacred about the size of the buildings?
Well, I think that... Well, to use the word sacred, is anything sacred? Well, maybe not sacred, but I think the idea is to try to provide as much flexibility as possible to businesses at the north end of the county that have needs from storing things to processing things, you know, whether there's some type of small processing plant that could go in one of these buildings, to whether it would be a small distributorship of some type that may take a smaller building. So the idea is to give various options for those that would need industrially zoned property. Now, the idea would be to develop this in phases because this financially it makes sense to start build some of the buildings and then add to it in different phases, which is what's being proposed. Okay. But the idea is that the setbacks, just the fact that the property is fairly narrow, does create concerns. And then, kind of to top it off, right through the middle of this, as you'll see on that site plan exhibit 6, where the roadway is in the middle. That's power line easement that's 100 feet wide that cuts the property that way, too.
Anything else for these gentlemen at this point? Thank you very much. We want to recall staff, but I think you indicated you have some questions for staff.
Well, I don't know. There may be some others.
Yeah, others here.
Oh, okay. Yes. Did you yeah. folks? Yeah, and then we'll bring staff back at that point. Okay, it's cold.
It's cold. Sorry, my name's cold Therese Morse. Yeah, it's cold in here. Mm-hmm. It's cold outside. I have Devil's Lake Rock Company that is just to the east of Mike Phillips' property. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to address Mr. Thompson's concern over truck traffic. We have a landscape sales yard, and we have the biggest trucks that can travel down the road coming up to our facility to bring our landscape materials up there. Mm-hmm. That we've not had any comment of any trouble. They travel up there just fine.
Great.
So
thank you
I
very
just
much.
Wanted to
thank you.
Add that.
So, I'd like to clarify. I'm sorry. So, the property you represent is to the east of the Phillips property?
Yes.
Okay. On the same side.
On the same side, and part of our facility is on the other side of the highway or street. Also, it's the street dead ends at the end of part of our property, and it's a little bit different the way it's lined out, but so we have maybe 4.5 acres to the south of the street, and about that same, a little bit less, on the north side of the street. And our office is right next to the Phillips property. It's next to the FedEx building, next to the Phillips property.
Okay, I'll ask my question.
Well, if I can, this is the FedEx building right here at the end of the road. Uh-huh. And then your office building is in the building right next to it here, so it would be that building right there.
Okay. Did you want to be heard, sir?
I'd like to.
Yeah, sure. And state your name for the record.
William Geddes, Geddes Paving.
Okay.
I'm a little confused why, if it's a 30-foot easement all the way through there, why is it... Oh, I guess I should say, too, we just purchased a piece of property to the south of Mr. Phillips. Mm-hmm. And I just am a little confused. Why is it 30 feet all the way through there, and then they're trying to get 60 feet now? I'd just like to know why.
It's actually 60 feet in front of your property.
All the way to there is only 30? Is that what's
no,
going on?
No. There's just a portion at the very west end that's 30 feet.
Okay.
Yeah, to one point, right. And the rest of it's 60 feet.
The 30 runs from 101
to the section line there.
Yeah, just to the section line.
Okay. Okay. I think that's right.
I'm just curious
right.
Why they would need the 60 feet, I guess.
Yeah.
The 30 feet is substandard.
Oh, okay.
It actually shows right here on this one. This is where that wetland area was that the photographs were of, was right in here, that garage. On that one corner that when I looked south, I think it was on the very last photo, that's that garage right there that shows in that photo. Mm-hmm. And then this is where it changes from 30 to 60.
Well, we've been hauling transfers through there, and the road seems to be working good for us, so
thank you.
I'd like to clarify, I'm sorry. So which piece of property did you buy?
The old wrecking yard there on the...
Can you point it out on the map?
You're way east, right?
No, we're right across the street from Mike's. Which one's Mike's?
Mike's is this property.
This one?
Yeah.
We're this one right here, yeah. It's like 5 acres.
So my question is, the 60-foot right-of-way, how does it impact your property?
I don't think it really does it?
Whether it's 30 or 60, doesn't
it doesn't really matter. Yeah, I don't think we need 60. It's the bottom line, I guess, is what I was trying to get.
Okay, yeah. I understand that. But I just want to make sure if it impacts.
It seems to be working
property.
Pretty good the way it is. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, if I may, I'd ask Ms. Morris to come back, and I'd be interested in, again, how the 30 or the 60 foot easement affects your property.
The FedEx property has a fence around it. I think that has to do with Homeland Security. that they're required to provide, and that fence will be considerably inside the right-of-way.
Okay.
Thank you.
We would prefer the 30 feet also.
Okay. Let's bring staff back, and at this point I'll say what I'm sure everybody else would agree with, that we obviously cannot deliberate and make a decision today. We have received a lot of material, some we haven't even had a chance to look at, so we're going to need to continue this hearing to another date. But gentlemen, if you'd come on back, please. And Commissioner Thompson, I know.
If I may, before Commissioner Thompson asks this question, I'd like to clarify the 60-foot as shown on our survey. The 60-foot is, even though it is the design right-of-way under our county road standards, and that is something you may want to address when you look at the statutory issues involved here in ORS 368. We do have some direction there, although, as Mr. Bartolus points out, you also have discretion. The 60-foot, as shown on this, is based upon the center of the traveled way, but the original width is based upon a deed to the public by the predecessors in title of these people on the east end of the road. And that's where the 60-foot comes from. That's not something we applied. It's from that original deed from the predecessors in title.
Okay. Now I'll ask you a follow-up question since you made that. So at our discretion, is 40, is there any magic between 30 and 60, because it's under any rules that you've seen in the past?
Well, we have county road standards, and those are in place for these type of roads, and our county code directs us to have a 60-foot right-of-way for this type of road. However, the direction for you is whatever's in the interest of the public. It's quite clear that part of 368 includes that provision when you're determining what is in the best interest of the public during the legalization process.
Let me ask a question of Roy then. You know trucks probably about as well as anybody I know, and is your experience that 30 is adequate, or is there a adequate for the style of trucks that's being used there, excluding the wide loads? I mean, cranes and things like that can take the center lane, be flagged out. But what's your experience?
We're talking apples and oranges. It really doesn't matter the width of the truck. Yes, will a truck fit on a 10-foot lane? Yes, it will. But we're not talking improved road width. We're talking about right-of-way. And we're talking about the things that have to exist outside the paved surface, things that exist outside of the traveled way. We, as maintainers of the road, have to maintain a safety zone beyond the edge of the traveled way, meaning a shoulder. We have ditches to maintain. We have to allow room for utilities to exist. The top of the hill, Mr. Bartolus showed you the pictures of the big cut slope. It's necessary for us to have the width clear to the top of that slope, because it's up to us to maintain that slope. If you were to reduce the right-of-way width just to the usable surface, anytime we did any kind of work outside of the traveled way, we're going to have to actually get permission from the private property owner, or have some kind of an agreement with each individual property owner to maintain the sides of the road. Therefore, the critical thing isn't the width of the travel way and whether or not a truck can fit on that lane. The critical thing is about the entire width of the right-of-way and what we have to do in order to maintain the entire width of the road.
So, under Mr. Bartolus's comments, he made the assumption that the road would not be expanded. Is that assumption something that you would agree with, or is that just an assumption?
Well, because of where the road exists adjacent to the city of Lincoln City and the growth of Lincoln City, one can assume that Southeast 23rd Drive is going to fall into the same realm as Avery Street, north of Newport, Euquina Heights, the north end of Yaquina Bay Road. As cities grow, they start to encompass these county roads. And the process has always been long-term that when a county road becomes entirely surrounded by a city, we start the process of a jurisdiction transfer. To get the jurisdictional transfer done, basically whatever you're transferring has to be close to or has to meet the standard set by each city. A 30-foot right-of-way is not an acceptable standard width for a city.
What would be?
What would be?
An acceptable right-of-way
for Lincoln City.
Since it would be potentially...
I'm not exactly sure what the city of Lincoln City actually...
Okay. We can find out.
I know that in our general conversations about Logan Road with the city of Lincoln City, the road that exists up there now, which is 11 to 12 foot paved lands with additional widening for the shoulders, they actually asked us to improve the road even further and basically pipe the ditches and put in catch basins to allow for more room. But we didn't actually get into what the actual width would be required for the transfer.
We can get that.
Okay. Anything else for
commissioners? Again, we received the letter, so we do have some issues on the west side of the road.
Okay, if you're going to go on to a different, I guess I have one more request. Sure. I'd like to have somebody from the planning department talk here because I'm interested in making a decision that has the best outcomes into the future. And while I respect the attorney's clairvoyance as far as where this road may go in the future, you know, times change and it's a long time in the future. So I'm interested in the planning department's comments about development in the area. I'm interested in what Lincoln City requirements would be because eventually I think they will take over jurisdiction of the road. So those would be my last comments.
So let me talk just a little bit about the west end. You did receive this letter, and that does place us in a little bit of a conundrum because, frankly, we would like to see 60-foot right-of-way along the entirety of this area here. And contrary, I think, to what Mr. Bartolos indicated, the utilities that exist, if I understand it right, along the 30-foot right-of-way area there are not within the right-of-way. They're not, and they exist outside of the right-of-way now at more of the standard width of doing that.
I was only referring to the Phillips property.
I know, but I thought I saw some reference to the 30-foot, the utilities would have to be within the 30-foot right-of-way. They are not now currently on the west end of the property.
Well,
just to clarify.
We're talking apples and oranges.
I know, I just want to make sure it's clear that you know, the issue with this west end is that, unfortunately, what we've got is a deed. The deed is what we're referring to in terms of the legalization on the west end. It's not that we wouldn't desire and actually pursue, potentially through some other means, expansion of that right-of-way. It's not adequate for what's going on out there. It's existing. It's what we have to deal with, but it would not necessarily be adequate. And then there's some other issues around the improvements that were made to 101 at the intersection of 23rd. There's a whole history which we're needing to look into that a little bit more in terms of what occurred on that end. It's almost one of those things where, you know, in order to assist Mr. Phillips and the people on the east end here, we may come back and make a recommendation. We bifurcate this process and only legalize the portion, you know, with whatever decision you make from the section line to the east and then deal with this other part later. We may want to end up doing that, but we have to look at this first.
Mr. Belmont, I could ask you a question here. Mr. Outerkirk's letter to us, the concluding paragraph, Mr. Morris has expressed a desire to resolve this matter in an amicable and mutually beneficial way. My recommendation is that you table this matter, allowing negotiations to occur between your counsel and Mr. Morris's. So I'm wondering if the best step, obviously there needs to be more research, more discussion. Should we continue the hearing to a time certain or just table the matter at this point?
No, I would not table it. I'd continue it to a time certain.
And then
again,
we're
trying to resolve some issues on the east end that may be different from those on the west end.
I agree with the points. There's more information.
Yep.
Doug's brought up, there's some information I'd like to gather.
We need to review all that's been entered into the record, so at this point, are we looking at maybe scheduling for January then, do you think?
Unfortunately, I think with the way your schedules are right now, there won't be an opportunity to have all three of you back before us until January 11th.
Okay.
Just like to let Mr. Bartolus know, that's the problem we got in terms of the time frame.
No, I understand that, and I understand there's going to be a need to be more information gathered. And my comment about the scalpel approach mm-hmm. rather than the buzzsaw was exactly because, like Mr. Morris has indicated on the west end, there's different issues as you move along the road. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure there's a one-size-fits-all solution for all of it, and that's where I think you have the ability to craft a solution.
What I would recommend, though, is that you actually make a motion to continue the hearing, so that'll allow an opportunity for both the
right. additional
participants' input right. from all sides.
Sure.
Okay. So we won't close the hearing.
No.
We'll just continue it, too. And it would be January 11th.
Okay.
Thank you.
Need a motion to that effect, then, to continue this hearing until January 11th?
Make a motion to continue to January 11th.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to continue the hearing to a time and date certain, January 11th, 2017. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the hearing is continued. We move on to decision and action right now. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Purchase of property for Crisis Respite Housing and Services in Newport, Oregon. We've discussed this at the last two meetings, and I understand that this document before us will make it official, and the purchase official, and authorize County Council Belmont to sign on behalf of the board.
Commissioners, if I might, though, I'd like to just clarify for the record, just because it's been a little bit even confusing to me, that there's multiple street addresses for the property, and the various documents have referred to the primary ones being 37 and 41 Northwest Cottage Avenue.
Correct.
But it also includes 33 and 35, the street addresses. But it's the same properties. It's tax-wise.
Why do I find some irony in that after the public hearing we just had?
It's funny. So it is the same properties. The legal descriptions have been reviewed, and we know which properties we're actually purchasing, but there are multiple street addresses. I've amended the order to make sure it reflects it. I think the one in your packet doesn't have it all, but it does reflect 33, 35, 37, and 41 Northwest Cottage, but it's tax lots 8900 and 9200 of Assessor's Map 1111 8BA, also known as lots 16 and 17 of Pine Hill Block 1, 9 Thompson's addition to the city of Newport. So we're talking about the same properties. I want to clarify that if you see other references to fewer than those addresses, that it actually encompasses all the property. And then this order would finalize the authorization to purchase the property and delegate to me authority to sign mm-hmm. the myriad documents we need to do in order to complete the transaction.
Okay, are we ready for a motion then?
I might just comment, I've had no other public feedback or input since our public hearing on the issue. So
I've had some informal public feedback, and it's all been positive.
Good. Okay. I'll move for approval of the order to purchase the property for Crisis Respite Housing and Services in Newport, Oregon.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's approved. And then we've got the order name change for the portion of U.S. Highway 20 to be transferred to Lincoln County as part of the U.S. Highway 20 Pioneer Mountain Eddyville project. And this is formalizing the decision we reached last week to keep the provisional name of Crystal Creek Loop.
And the only thing I'd just add to this, just for clarification, and I do wish Steve Card was here because he wrote a nice little article on this last time, but I would just want to make it clear that you're taking the action today if you adopt this order so that the road actually becomes, the name becomes effective as of the signing of the order, but the property owners, the people who have addresses along there, really are given up to 90 days, and we have a specific date here. I'll make sure I get the right one. It is March. Oh, no, I'm not seeing it right. March 8th, there it is. March 8th, 2017, to begin using the addresses and make all the necessary changes they have for the addresses. And there will be a notification that goes out, because it's not just a road name change in this case. There's a whole new set of actually street addresses that go along with this. The property owners will get notification, specific notification. Also, all the utilities, all the emergency services providers, others who, post offices, all will also get notification of this change. But the effective date is immediately, but they don't have to make the change until March 8th. Just wanted to clarify that.
And is there any update on when we might be ready to, you know, have the paperwork from ODOT we've been talking about to actually formalize the transfer?
Defer to
Mr. Kenyon.
Mr. Kenyon.
Once again, I'm Roy Kenyon, Public Works Director for Lincoln County. As of right now, ODOT and the county have agreed on the description of the section of road that's to be transferred. All the documents have been updated. All the edits have been made. I received an email from ODOT last week that they had sent the jurisdictional information to their right-of-way department for signatures. My guess is that either sometime the end of this week or first of next week, we will receive those signed documents, which then will be turned over to the board for their signature.
All righty.
And I do believe that once the signatures are made and there is an order, then the jurisdictional transfer will be finalized.
And the check will be in the mail?
And the check will be in the mail. I've been told as soon as the signatures are on the piece of paper.
That's important too.
$1.1 million, right?
That is correct.
Excellent.
So if I may, I'd like to ask a tangential question, but we are talking about the name change in the Highway 20 project. There's been discussion about the mileage signs and the fact that the miles are missing, if you will. And I know certainly there's a great concern on the part of our emergency responders as to being able to properly identify those locations in the case of an emergency. Can you give us an update as to where we are as far as discussions with ODOT on that issue?
We have not. I have actually not met with ODOT on that subject. We had a meeting scheduled, and that fell through, and so I have not rescheduled that meeting. But you're talking about the mile posting from the intersection of 101 East?
To the county line.
Right.
And I believe it would be in our best interest to have those miles accurate rather than a hodgepodge of what they were.
Understood. But there are a lot of things that currently exist that reference those mileposts, even though they're not accurate.
Understood.
And so
it's not a simple process.
Well, I know in the county road system, all of our culvert inventories, all of our signed inventories, everything that we inventory along a roadway is tied to the existing milepost.
Even highway, not accurate.
Highway 20 is the same way. And so there would be a lot of work that needed to be done. But we have not gone any further in that discussion since the last time we talked. Like I said, we had a meeting set up that didn't happen. I've been busy with a few other things. I've not been able to get back to that.
Hickman Road, one of them?
Yes.
Commissioners, can I also, I'm sorry, just real quickly. Just one point along with that, that hopefully in those discussions, I mean, an important part of this process also is our emergency responders and their, and you know, how this impacts their ability to provide. So hopefully they're
that's
at the table talking about this.
Yeah,
too.
No, so, and that's what's driving my interest in the issue.
Yeah, I know our emergency manager, Jenny Damaris, did a very detailed to ODOT making those points related to emergency response and appealing for consideration of a renumbering.
And I also recognize it's very complex, but I also think that if we're going to address this issue, now would be the time to try to do so.
Yeah. Commissioner Thompson, sorry.
No, it's okay. I'll just let it slide.
Okay. Anything else on this? If not, are we ready for a motion to formalize the name change?
I'll move for approval of the order to change the name for the portion of U.S. Highway 20 to be transferred to Lincoln County as part of U.S. Highway 20 Pioneer Mountain-Andyville Project 2 Crystal Creek Loop.
Second.
And before I call for a vote, I'll say, by the way, good idea, Commissioner Thompson. You were the first one to suggest that name, weren't you?
No, I don't think I was.
I Actually, it was Mr. Kenyon.
Yes.
Nobody's
going to
start
the
rumor.
We're
going to start the rumor.
I've been accused of that, but that's not actually.
Oh, okay. Mr. Hunt. Okay, you know. Nobody's claiming to be future historians. Right. Somebody will say, right, who came up with that, and for good or ill, we'll say, okay, we have a motion.
In the geography.
I think somebody, we were talking about all the creeks that were creek there, and we were looking down for one of the creeks that poured into it.
Yeah. That sounded
that, I don't know who. I think we're just going down systematically through all the creeks, and we hit that one. It sounded like it seemed to make it. I'd say it was
resonate.
Yep. Okay. All right. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kenyon. We move on to reports from commissioners, and I think maybe I'll start off, and Commissioner Hunt and I were both in attendance Monday at the 14th Annual Oregon Business Summit in Portland, and he moderated a great panel discussion on the marine sector, and I'm sure he'll want to have some comments on that. He may also want to have some comments or not on the point that seemed to be the takeaway for a lot of people that were there and was the focus of most of the media coverage, the fact that the state's elected leaders in the business community do not seem to be in sync right now in terms of approaching the $1.7 billion budget hole. You know, did hear still unanimous support for addressing transportation as job one. But the business community, the message I heard loud and clear was, yes, they realize that this is a shortfall that cannot be addressed strictly through cutting without doing some serious harm to vital government services and harming vulnerable people. They're willing to support some kind of new revenues if, and this is the big if it comes with some kind of attempt to control costs and at very least, if not reduce expenditures, at least slow down their growth. You know, one of the big things is that with a growing state, there's more demand on education, lots of services, so costs are rising. But, you know, it seemed like the message from the governor, the House Speaker, the Senate President was, you tell us first what you'll accept, and the business community saying, no, you're the elected leaders. You give us a proposal to react to. So that, I thought, was kind of unfortunate, but I was also pleased in, you know, listening to informal discussions outside of the presentations. There seemed to be legislators from both the House and Senate, and the other hopeful thing to me, from both parties, talking about essentially saying, if the leadership won't drive a package like that, we're willing to take that on. So I'm hoping that AOC can perhaps be a voice to help advance an agenda like that. Commissioner Hunt?
Well, certainly, as you already indicated, I guess one of the high points, if you will, was the panel that I moderated, at least I thought it was a high point. I thought it was very successful in communicating the size and the scope of the maritime sector and the huge economic impact it has on our state and the huge opportunities that we have to expand that, create jobs, the jobs that not only pay well but have a fast track, if you will, for increases in those salaries. So I was particularly, I thought the maritime sector breakout session really addressed the first point. Patrick Kritzer, the CEO of Tillamook Creamery, was the, I guess, the moderator, if you will, of the morning session. And he talked about three points as far as the Oregon business plan. One was economic growth, then expense control, and then revenues, as Chair Hall, you've already identified. There was also recognition that Oregonians will support education, and they do support, you know, job growth, job training, and certainly the maritime sector addresses those two issues very directly. So, quite pleased. I will take a moment to thank the panelists. We had, I think, a select group of Rick Williams provided some background. He's kind of the issues expert. He's a CEO of Leidos, and also I like to point out that he was a commander of a nuclear submarine, so an interesting background there. Also, Caitlin Sauss, I think fourth or fifth generation of the Sauss family, spoke about some of the national issues. Rob Rich, which is involved a lot with the tugboats and the pilots and more of a regional perspective. Kristen Wilkin from Clatsop Community College spoke about the educational aspects and the possibility of expanding some of the programs in Clatsop County south through not only the Oregon Coast Community College, but Southern Oregon Community College. And Representative Gomberg was there, and with Senator Roblin in the audience, I think the two of them got a very clear message that we're looking for some legislative recognition of the value of the maritime sector, and feel that we need some help in getting the data that will support what we know to be the opportunities in the maritime sector. And finally, there is money available for job training. So again, I felt it was very very meaningful program, and appreciate all of those who participated.
Yep. Commissioner Thompson.
Good job, Doug.
Well, we're still taking a bite at that elephant.
An elephant, and you know, I've been dealing with it for years, but you're making more progress than I've seen made, even though I've seen two different groups form. This is not like this one's getting some momentum.
And one thing I ought to mention that Doug didn't mention, Commissioner Hunt didn't mention, is that Rob Bovet of AOC was in the audience, and he indicated he wants to draft up some legislation, and I think we'll have a couple of willing sponsors in our representative and senator, essentially, to provide formal recognition, I think, at least in workforce investment, to recognize the marine sector, which is not in statute right now. So
it's come a long way. You know, I started that one meeting with just the community colleges, and now since you've got your meeting taken over that into this whole big picture, I'm encouraged that we're finally going to get something where, because the Employment Department has to, they recognize there's problems, but it takes big changes to make this thing work. And unfortunately, some of these are on the federal level too. This is
right.
This is not an easy thing to deal with. So I'm encouraged that you've made this much progress.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you'd like to report, Commissioner?
Well, I always like to talk about new things that are being talked about out there. At AOC, we talked a little bit about building a backbone of early earthquake warning devices. It was a meeting that went to that was interesting. I got a call from John Delaney at the University of Washington the other day, and he was the person who brought the OOI, the big undersea cable that we built offshore, quarter of $1 billion worth of research cable, and he's now going to be involved in trying to expand into building a backbone of devices that will be connected over the internet, but will give you instantaneous response on information of earthquakes and tsunamis. And 3 to 5 minutes, we might be able to get early detection. Japan has built an array like this, and it's one that could be the next big step in dealing with earthquakes for their coast. 5 minutes doesn't sound like much, but 5 more minutes early detection could save a lot of lives. And now what's the value, and whether or not we can get the federal government, because this is a big enough dollar project. It's, it has to come from the federal government through, hopefully, National Science Foundation, because this is the kind of science that we need to save lives in the Pacific coast. So it's just one of those things that started, that's all I'm saying. But you've seen before when I started saying, hey, this is, looks like the next one, that we move forward with it. I'm encouraged this is going to be the next big project coming in marine science.
Excellent.
Good work.
Thank you. Okay, constituent input. Do we have any?
Just really minor.
Okay, if you come on forward, please, so we can. capture it for the record.
My name is Shandy Boyles. It seems like kind of a piddly little thing overall, but I did want to do a heads up so that it doesn't go any further. On November 23rd, two Lincoln County officers trespassed onto our property, two different places, almost 100 yards in. They claimed that they were doing a welfare check on me and on my stepmother. And it's nice that the county would think that that's a concern, and I appreciate that. But turns out that wasn't the case. There was no one who had initiated a check that was a subterfuge to trespass onto the property. Nothing came of it. As far as I know, nothing besides the actual trespass happened. But since there's a history of, you know, the not respecting the Fourth Amendment and trespassing without legitimate warrants, I just wanted to have it on the record.
Okay.
Because my experience with Lincoln County is when I file things with the Sheriff's Department, it ends up in a circular file instead of being addressed. So I wanted it here. And like I said, I don't want a big thing about it because nothing happened, but I did want it recorded.
Okay. Thank you. Do we need the executive session today, Mr. Belmont?
We do.
And do you anticipate coming back into public session? Okay. Then we will recess momentarily into executive session pursuant to ORS 192.660, paren 2, paren H, to discuss litigation matters. Our next meeting of the Board of Commissioners will be 1 week from today, Wednesday, December 14th, 2016, 9:30 here at the courthouse. Until then, we're going to recess into executive session.